are CIOI, but our friends call us Indy 1015. Live from Hamilton.
You're listening to a show called Dangerfield on Indy 1015. I'm Mary, and my guest tonight is Canadian singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, and producer Royal Wood. iTunes has named him Songwriter of the Year. He's recorded multiple albums, received several Juno nominations, and headlined shows in such world-class venues as Massey Hall, Roy Thompson Hall, the National Arts Center, and more. He's toured with and opened for such legendary artists as Bonnie Raitt and David Gray, and I'm super honored to have him on my show tonight. So welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me on your show.
Awesome. Cool. Well, why don't we kick off the show with a song of yours called Armor, which you released on June 24th of this year, and then we'll come back and we'll chat.
That sounds great.
We heard it on the radio, something playing soft and slow, reminded us of everything we used to be. That was long before the war, just what are we fighting for? There is still a fire that's burning underneath. When I hold you in my arms, betting we could beat the odds. When your heart's beating out of rhythm, it's hard to fight through your bad decisions. When you're standing, betting we could beat the odds, yeah.
By Royal Wood, and Royal joins me tonight on Dangerfield on Indie 1015. If you love what you heard there, you can find him online at royalwood.ca, and he's also on Instagram, instagram.com/royalwood, and on all your streaming platforms. So tell me a little bit about when you wrote this song and kind of what prompted you to do it.
Well, I mean, I'll try to give you a condensed answer, because it would require, you know, a few hours and a bottle of wine to really dive into it. the short version is that I was in the UK working with a writer producer named Jamie Scott, and him and I made my last record called Ever After the Farewell together. And up until that record, I've always written my records from top to bottom and form most of the instruments and generally was the producer as well. And this time around, that first time working with Jamie, him and I co-wrote a bunch of stuff and co-produced a bunch of stuff. And I loved it so much having someone else's input. And not that they were doing the heavy lifting, but just to have a contrary idea that wasn't yours. I feel like it raised the bar because then the best idea in the room got to win. And I just fell in love with the process. So I went back to the UK for this record and we just wrote a few of the songs. I ended up writing a lot of the songs for the record myself, but I wanted to do a few with Jamie. And Armor was the last thing we wrote. And we really and truly thought we were done all of our sessions. And then there was just a little melody at the piano that kind of started and Jamie just loved it and I loved it and we just kind of went from there and it was very fast. Like it's, I want to say the song wrote itself, but it just felt that way. Like I wrote the verses in the pre-chorus and I kind of thought I had a chorus and then Jamie's like, mate, so what about something like this? And he sat down and just had this like beautiful, instantly beautiful melody for a chorus. It was like, stop me dead in my tracks. I'm like, this is why I'm here. I came to elevate what it is I do. So
he's recorded and written with, you know, everyone from, you know, Ed Sheeran to, you know, Bieber, like just like massive in like direction. Like,
massive hits. Like you pull up to the studio and it's this beautiful, like 1600, like when I say 1600, I mean like it was from 1600. It was an original barn and house in the middle of like rural UK and just outside of London and in Surrey actually. And you know, there's like a Lamborghini and a Ferrari and a Ford. It's like it's ridiculous. And then you pull up and you go into a studio and he's so chill and he's so laid back and he writes these massive hits, but he loves like 70s songwriters and he loves like throwback music. And it's one of the reasons why he jumped at working with me on the last record. He's like, you write the music that I want to be writing and want to be making all the time. And so I just, you know, I want to work with you. And so that's it. I mean, he was kind of raised on the Eagles and Billy Joel and, you know, Elton John and all the stuff that I loved as a little kid, even though it was way before my time, for some reason, that was the stuff that I loved. And, so yeah, we hit it off on an artistic level, I think. And as a result, we just make real music.
And then what's your kind of like, you know, day like when you're in another country and you're there to record? Are you kind of like a night owl? Are you like an early morning riser? Like, are you like, how do you kind of prefer to create when you're collaborating with someone?
Yeah, I mean, good question. It always depends on the person you're collaborating with. And I've done co-writes and production and produced other people all over the world. And I still do that quite a bit. I mean, obviously it stopped when the pandemic happened for a while, but I'm used to long hours and long days. And certainly when I make a trip like that to the UK to work, like I've always been an early riser and late to bed. I don't really sleep much. So we would start, you know, I'd be up at 6 or 7 in the morning and kind of listening back to what I'd started the day before. And by 9 or 10, he would roll in from a run or something and we just get to work and then we'd go until God knows when at night. And then he'd take off and go see his wife and kids. And I'd just keep working. And I'd always be the last one in the studio with the engineer recording because I'm a multi-instrumentalist. So I play a lot of different instruments. So it was always my task to try to record what it is that we had started. And then the next morning he'd come in and listen to what we did and make sense of it and have ideas. And we just keep going that way.
And are you someone who kind of like, do you chart your music when you share it with people or do you more kind of like play by or share by like ear with when you're collaborating with other people?
Depends on the person I'm collaborating with. I can arrange, like I arranged all the strings and horns for my first few records and I certainly read music and can chart music for musicians if they come in to sub for someone else. But most singer-songwriters and most producers you work with don't.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, they barely, most of them barely read music at all.
Yeah.
But they have an incredible ear for it. And as a result, the language is usually in numbers. You know, you'll say it's a 1, it's a 4, it's a 5, it's a minor 6, right. It's a minor 2. And it flows pretty fast that way. And other people are even more dumbed down. You know, they're just like, I can't tell you the chord, but it sounds like this. And you're like, yeah. Okay.
And as a multi-instrumentalist, like, would people be surprised? Like, do you predominantly write on, would you say, guitars and keys, or would people be surprised of songs that you may have written on a different instrument?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, you know, I've played, I play a lot of instruments on my records, but I've certainly written, I wrote a record of mine called The Burning Bright almost exclusively on a ukulele, living in a little cottage in rural Ireland, in the County Meath outside of Slane. And, you know, it's not a ukulele record. It all ended up on grand piano and upright piano and electric guitar and acoustic guitar. And it's just how I wrote it, though, because it was easy and I could travel with it and walk in a field and sit down and write. And it just depends. Depends on where it starts, you know.
And do you find that, like, when you're writing a song like that, like the songs that you wrote on like ukulele, did you have kind of like orchestral kind of, like, do you think kind of in those increments, in that, like, do you write simply and then add the surrounding kind of sound after, or is that in your mind as you're writing it?
Well, when I first started, I would definitely say that all songs presented themselves as I wanted them to be heard, especially back then, because I was playing all the instruments and producing all the songs. So as I'd write it, I'd definitely hear what I wanted it to be. And I've learned later on in life to not get demoitis and not be too locked into an idea. So I try to put down the roughest of ideas that I can and leave room for interpretation, both for myself and forever, you know, whoever I'm working with. What I tend to think in, contrary to that, is instead of thinking what the instrument should be, it's almost like what the color should be that I should feel as I listen to something. And if I can accomplish that, then I know that I accomplished what I wanted to do when I first wrote it. You know, like if I said I want to feel, you know, blue, I immediately know what that means. I just do. And if I say red, I know what that means. And you can kind of like, you can kind of paint in that kind of way in your mind and have just have a feeling or a vibe or an energy or something.
And would you say that you're as equally influenced by kind of your surroundings where you are as your mood, or does one kind of outweigh the other?
No, I mean, I think we are our thoughts, obviously, and your surroundings immediately influence those thoughts, and your thoughts become your emotions. So when I've written a record, say it, like I said, in rural Ireland, it's a much different record than something, say, I wrote in Los Angeles or Paris or, you know, on some like writing retreat or something in Banff, Alberta. It's going to have it's immediately just going to feel different. It's just going to have its own stamp on it based on geography. And obviously you can take that and then turn it on its head and reinvent it and make it completely different. But I feel like as the writer, you tend to not veer too far away from the genesis of something.
Beautiful. Well, listen, let's listen to another song of yours. You put this out in June 2021, and it's a song called Say You Will, and then we'll come back and we'll chat.
Any other day, until you turn and walk my way, it only took a second then, till you were the one. Your hair was blowing in the wind, this blue I finally got to win. The days have turned to months since then, so I am on my knees saying, all of my life waited for someone like you to ride your side. Till the end of our kind. No, you tend to speak your mind. I'm sure that it's a lot to take. Most of the time, I swear my heart belongs to you. There's nothing that I wouldn't do. I swim across the ocean blue.
Say You Will by Royal Wood, and Royal joins me tonight on Dangerfield on Indie 101.5, and you can find his music at royalwood.ca. He's also on all the streaming platforms and instagram.com/royalwood. And so we were talking a little bit before this song about kind of like orchestral arrangements, and You seem to have had a lot of different experiences playing with orchestras. So everything from the National Arts Center to playing with the Kitchener-Waterloo Symphony. And I'm curious, I saw that you were scheduled to, did you end up playing in Alaska? I saw it was around the pandemic time. And that
I did, yeah. Oh, cool. Yeah, I did. I did like 3 weeks of touring across Alaska, which was incredible.
Wow.
It was I've done obviously a lot of touring in my lifetime, almost 20 years of it. And, it is the most jaw dropping scenery. You know, it makes the mountains of Canada feel like a toy. You know,
right.
It's just like, what is this place?
And how did you end up there? Like, how did that experience happen?
It happened because a presenter who is a part of like a block booking.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a consortium in Alaska where all of the presenters get together because they can't afford, like most people can't afford to just go to Alaska just for one show and fly home. Like,
right.
Presenters can't, most of them can't afford to pay to bring a band and have them all fly over and just play a show.
Right.
Unless it's like a massive, massive act with a massive venue. And, you know, but for someone like me who plays in 500 seaters to 2000 seaters, they're not making a ton of money unless it's like the right city and the right show. So for something like that, the presenters all get together. So if they all decide that they want an artist to come to their country or their state or their province, this happens in Canada a lot too. You know, I just did a rural Saskatchewan tour, and this is the reason that that happened is because presenters got together and like, if we all pool our money and we offer the artist X dollars and we all split on travel, then suddenly the production cost of everything comes drastically down, right? Because everyone, we're traveling with all the gear and PA and crew, and it's all basically like a tour suddenly happens, but they all were a part of making it happen. So
that's fascinating. I've never actually heard, like, you're the only person I know that's ever even played Alaska, and that's fascinating that it's kind of like, it's like the inverse of normally how most touring works.
In the world that I work in, which is, you know, I'm a PAC performer, meaning like performing arts center. So 99% of the time I perform in a theater or, you know, a hall or a concert hall or something. And I don't play generally in a club or something anymore. Mm-hmm. Obviously I did when I started and I loved it, but I'm very much like, it's a sit down audience and there's a grand piano and there's usually strings and singers and it's like it's a show, you know? And as a result, the theater world, they do block bookings all the time, all over the world. Like, it happens constantly. It's a real thing.
You referenced the tour that you did in Saskatchewan and Alberta, and it was a tour called Behind the Curtain Tour. And you did that in April, May of this year, over 16 days. And was it a full sneak peek of your upcoming album that's coming out this November?
Good question. No, it wasn't a full because I didn't want to give too much away. Mm-hmm. And also, even when I start doing the full band show that starts touring this fall, you know, like when I headline Massey in October, I'm not going to do the record from start to finish because who as a fan wants to come hear a show that's all brand new music that they've never heard? So it was just a few select songs that I feel like would translate well with a band. And that would give like a bit of a roller coaster ride. Like, it touches all the touchstones, you know, there's some ballads and there's some up-tempo stuff. And then it allows me to also play the quote unquote hits in the set as well that people want to hear because they know it.
And out of the newer songs that you premiered, did you, after playing them live, is there anything that you're thinking of changing based on reaction or is it kind of like, are you someone who kind of, once you write a song, does it evolve over the course of performing it for live?
It really does. And I think that's one of the reasons why I was so proud and excited for this record is because I've sat on this record for almost 3 years in making it, you know, because I thought it was done at the beginning of the pandemic. I truly thought I had this finished record. And then March rolled around and, you know, this whole thing happened and suddenly all my tour dates for a year and a half got blown out and then any real touring opportunities got blown out after that. Right. So as a result, I was like, you know what? I have this record that I've always had to rush to finish a record because there's always been a tour because you have to tour as an artist constantly. And not only because that's how you make a fan, but that's also how we pay the bills. So because I couldn't tour, I was like, I'm just going to keep working on this record because I don't think it's done. You know, I thought it was done because it had to be, but I don't think it's done. So I just kept playing the music and rewriting lyrics and reproducing and trying things from the ground up again and scrapping stuff and writing new stuff. And so at the end of this, like this record now, What Tomorrow Brings, is so drastically different than what I started the pandemic with. And that's the kind of thing that happens when you tour it is what has always happens. I'll write a song in the morning and then I'm recording it by the afternoon. And then, you know, a few days later, we're recording strings and some singers and stuff. And then it's mixed and then the song's done. But when you play it and you tour it and you play it and you tour it, you finesse it to the point of like, oh man, if I could only go back in time, I would have done this. You know, I would have said this or I would have said that or it would have been slightly higher in key or a little bit faster. It's funny. I just recorded this, not just because time has kind of stood still, but right before the pandemic happened, I headlined in Massey in Toronto and I recorded live at Massey Hall. And when I listened to that show, and if I was to compare all of those songs from my records that I did live to the recorded versions, so many of the ones that used to be slow are fast, and so many of the fast ones are now slow. or I've changed keys, or I've changed words, or it's just, it happens because you play it and you finally find the sweet spot.
Cool. Well, why don't we play a song from that release that you did, and from that concert that you just referenced, live at Massey Hall. Let's play Photograph from that, and then we'll come back and we'll chat.
Amazing. Thanks, Mary.
I'm staring at an empty chair where you used to sit. We'd joke and laugh and talk a while. Well, I remember it. But now you're gone, and the love. Our days gone past these photographs. There was so much more to give, but now you're gone, and the love will linger on, 'cause I still hear our days gone past and these photographs.
Photograph by Royal Wood from his album Live at Massey Hall, and actually there's, it's a, first of all, it's a beautiful song, and I'll talk a bit more about that, but there's so many interesting kind of companion pieces to your performance, to that whole Massey Hall story. So I mean, A, it's amazing that you're going back there this fall, and I encourage everyone that, I think the tickets just went on sale, or the dates were just announced, I think, about 2 days ago. Mm-hmm. So please check that out. And then, but you had several different kind of interesting components. So first of all, there was a 5-minute documentary that was released, and you've got a great YouTube presence as well. It's YouTube.com/RoyalWoodMusic, and you've got a ton of wonderful videos on there. But you also have, there was a book that, was released at the end of 2021 by a gentleman named David McPherson. And it kind of, it's a collection of stories about the legacy of Massey Hall, for everyone from fans to artists who have played there. And you got to, I think, moderate a panel about that. So tell me a little bit about what that was like.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, headlining Massey as an artist is a, like, it's a jewel in the crown of any artist in this country. And, you know, when you first start playing music, everyone says, oh, like, if you can get the Massey Hall, you've made it, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, it's almost folklore. It's almost like, ooh, I'm like, well, will that happen? Could that happen? It's the white rabbit, you know.
Right.
And so when I finally did it, of course, you join an exclusive, like, very small club. Especially now that I can say that I'm going back to headline again, you know.
And sorry, have you been there since the reno, by the way?
I haven't. I was supposed to be there as like a VIP for their big launch, and then another wave happened and they canceled the whole unveiling. So I haven't been back, because since then, now my wife and I have had our second child as well. So we're just here hunkered down on our country property, and my studio and stuff's here. And we barely go to Toronto at all for any reason whatsoever. But we're out here, and I'm supposed to be going again soon, obviously, because we're going to start advertising Massey, and I'll do some like in-person stuff on site just to talk about the show coming up. But in regards to your question, yeah, David reached out and said, you know, obviously I was at the show and a longtime fan, and I'm putting together this coffee table book about the history of Massey, and they're behind it, and they've given me the green light. And would you be one of the artists that's on the newer side of it, right? Like, you're not a legacy act at Massey, you're a first timer, and we want that part of the book as well. So I just got to contribute a bunch of memories and thoughts and
cool. And then
how I felt. Yeah.
And how did you, like, what kind of thought did you put into when you put together a set list for that night for yourself?
It was definitely the career highlights, you know. It was, I thought about everything from, like, what do the fans want to hear, to what does my wife want to hear, to what is, you know, what would my family want to hear? My parents were always my biggest fans. And my father had passed away shortly before all that, that record and that tour and that release. So he was very much in my mind. My mom actually was the one that got on stage and, like, did the, she was the MC. Like, she got on stage.
Oh, that's so cool. Well, and the song that we just heard from your performance there, Photograph, I believe that references your father.
Mm-hmm. That was written for my dad. Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful. And yeah, it's a stunning song. And actually, another thing I wanted to chat about. So, I saw that you took your son to his first concert last week. And the funny thing was that I was actually at that concert.
No way. And
when I was talking to Sam after, and he was like, oh, cause he was the last guest on my show. And he's like, oh, who's coming up on your show? And I was like, oh, Royal Wood. He was like, he was just standing right there. And I was like, what? Like,
oh, that's funny.
But,
that's
funny. But you actually do a beautiful cover. So when you, I guess it was probably like around, I'm not sure, like 2010 or something, you put out an EP of some covers. And I believe you kind of crowdsourced it from folks about what people wanted you to cover. Mm-hmm. And you do a fantastic version of Sam's song, Don't Walk Away, Eileen. So maybe we'll play that. And then,
oh, amazing. That'd be great.
Cool.
I've been living for you since the age of 17. Don't walk away, idly. You've been telling me lies, now it's time to come clean. Hey, you come around and I, hey, you come around. can't keep time. Hey, you turn around and I'm, hey, you turn around and I'm, hey, you turn around and I'm left behind. Eileen says I am a boy, not a man. Crying in the corner, my head in my hands. I called her name and she ran. Slipping through fingers, a fistful of sand. Hey, you come around and I, hey, you come around and I, hey, you come around and I lose my.
So that was Don't Walk Away, Eileen, by a cover of a Sam Roberts song by Royal Wood. And Royal joins me tonight on Dangerfield. And you can find him at royalwood.ca. Yeah, I'm just super honored that he's here tonight to chat. And you actually got named by CBC last year in the top 10 of kind of Canadian covers of all time. So like up there with everyone from like Katie Lang's Hallelujah to like Buffy St. Marie, and like that's pretty awesome. So
yeah, thanks. That was that was a surprise. I'd forgotten that I'd even done any of that stuff. So when that came out, I was both honored and also like, whew, some time has really gone past. I barely remember making that. It's obviously the point of being an artist is not to steal.
Although
I mean, I've certainly, I think that's an old saying, right? Like, an okay artist borrows, but a great artist steals. I think that was like a Picasso line, but, you know, I didn't want to steal anything. And like you said, I wanted to try and reinvent it and make it my own and make it genuine. And it's one of the reasons why I just did that Tainted Love I covered Tainted Love because I had all this time on my hand, and I had this great studio in my place here in the country, and we couldn't tour and I couldn't do anything, and I'm a father of two, and I'm like, I can't just be a father of two. I've got to make some music or do something for a second.
Yeah, that's actually on my list of songs to play. So let's play that, and then we're going to come back and we'll chat. So this is Tainted Love by Royal Witt, a cover by two artists. We'll talk about them after. But yeah, this is an awesome, awesome version.
Sometimes I feel I've got to run away, I've got to get away from the pain you drive into the heart of me. The love we share seems to go nowhere, and I've lost my life, for I toss and turn.
Tainted Love by Royal Witt, who joins me tonight on Dangerfield on Indie 101.5. And actually, I have to thank you, because like one of my favorite parts about you know, doing this show is kind of like just like the rabbit holes that I go down in, kind of when I'm researching and looking up, you know, different facts and stories. And so, you know, I knew it from the Soft Cell, you know, 80s song, yeah, but then... Yeah. I heard the original, so Gloria Jones, and then there's this like fact that I read that she was actually, she re-recorded it. Have you heard that version, the Gloria Jones version?
No.
Oh, so it's like the original, and apparently, so she released it, and then it was re-recorded and produced by her then boyfriend Mark Bolan. I had no idea.
Okay.
From T-Rex. So I thought that was an interesting fact. So thank you for the little nugget there. But
it's funny because everyone keeps referencing that original version, and like I've done a few interviews for it and stuff, and I had no idea that it wasn't a Soft Cell song.
Yeah, me neither.
My whole life I thought it was their hit, their song. Like, you know, I danced through that all through high school. And I was in my studio. My publisher, I'm signed to Pure Music, and they own obviously the rights to a lot of big things. And I was like, hey guys, like I want to start kind of messing around with a bunch of new gear, and you know, I feel like I want to do a cover song. Not that I'll release it, but just send me a bunch of ideas just to get the ball rolling. Because if you give me something, then that forces me to have to do it. And if I have to think about it, I'll play it safe, and I'll pick something that I already know or love, and that I know I can do. And so they sent back a list of songs, and that was like the first song on the list. And it wasn't because I was like, ooh, that one. It was just because it was the first song on the list. And so I did it, and I immediately was like, oh, this is fun. Like, I had so much fun producing that and playing all that stuff that day. And then I sent it off to my mixer, and they sent it back, and everyone's like, oh, no, you got to release this. Like, you got to do something with that. So
totally. And speaking of kind of covers, so you, another kind of, you know, queen of some covers for her sets is Bonnie Raitt. And so so you did a tour with her in 2017, and I also read that she was the first cassette tape that you ever bought, which is pretty fortuitous. But I actually looked up like kind of what her set list was like when you were on that tour, and she was kind of averaging about like 8 covers a night. So this is the Cross Canada tour you did with her. So everything from like In Excess to, you know, obviously the John Prine cover, you know, B.B. King. Tell me about what that experience was like when you did that tour, and yeah, like how did that all, how did that, yeah, what was that like?
Yeah, I mean, it was the once in a lifetime opportunity to open for one of the greatest artist that is still performing. Like her, she's unstoppable. Like she's such an incredible performer, an incredible singer, an incredible human. She's so gracious and kind, and like no one on her crew, and I'm talking like multiple transports, like multiple transport trucks of crew. They have been with her for decades. Like no one leaves her tour. Nobody. Like everybody loves Bonnie. Everyone just has like 10 out of 10 glowing reviews for that human. Like she is just, she still sends us messages. She's like, you know, congratulations on the birth of this, and happy birthday, and the best to Allie. Like she's so kind and so sweet. And anyway, that's an aside, but I was in Europe. I was on tour, and I got a call from my agent and my management saying, hey, you got offered the Bonnie Raitt tour. You're one of two artists that Bonnie's hand picked. Like she got submitted a bunch of stuff from all the agencies, and she's picked you and one other artist, and we'll find out tomorrow who it's going to be. And I remember going to bed, I was in Ireland, and I was just like, I hope that other artist gets sick. You know? Just like I like not deathly sick, but just laryngitis that cannot be cured for 6 months, you know. Like I just want to do that to her so badly, because you're right, she was the first cassette tape I ever bought for myself. And it was because I saw her perform on SNL, and it was on the Nick of Time tour. She was playing slide guitar. I was a little kid. Like, I mean, like I was like 6, you know, I was a kid. And, I told my mom, I was like, I want that music. So she took me to Kmart or something, and I bought my first little piece of music. I was like, I wanted that so bad. I knew every song off that record. It's such an incredible record.
Yeah. And so are you someone who has kind of held on to stuff from when you were a kid? Like, do you have like kind of your first instruments? Do you have like some of your first records? Like, are you someone who kind of collects, or like, tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah. I mean, there's some things I do 100%. I have my first instruments. I have all of that. My very first guitar I actually gave to my brother to give to his daughter when she started playing guitar, but it's under promise that it will be returned.
Right.
But she currently is holding on to my first. I just have way too many instruments, but she has my first guitar, and now I'm like, oh, we should get that back and give it to my son. But I do, yeah, and all like my first book. Like my wife nudges me on that all the time. Like, why do you have all these books? Like, still, I was like, these are my books. I don't keep most things, you know, but records and instruments and books. Yeah, I have those. Yeah.
And do you name your guitars?
I don't, but I did name my first ukulele. That was Betsy, and Betsy became a bit of a fan favorite. You know, like I would be playing a show and people would yell out, like, "Where's Betsy?" So it has an effect, that's for sure. Betsy has an effect.
That's awesome. Well, listen, let's play one of the songs that when I first heard your music, it's so one of those beautiful songs that I've ever heard. And I think this is when I first heard about your art, and it's the song, "I'm So Glad I Met You." Okay.
Fantastic.
Might be a hard way, as long as I'm with you. As we are on our way, and it might be in harm's way, but as long as I'm with you, at the end of a long, long there is not much more to say than love. I'm so glad I met you. We may feel like folding, but as long as love is holding hands of me and you, waves can be raging, for together we'll be aging, as long as I'm with you. At the end of a long, long day, there is not much more to say than love. I'm so glad I met you. Do, 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 do. Do, 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 do. Winds can be blowing, for surely we'll be knowing, as long as I'm with you. At the end of a long, long day, there is not much more. At the end of a long, long day, there is not much more to say than love. I'm so glad I met you. I'm so glad I met you. So glad I met you.
That was "So Glad I Met You" by Royal Wood. Beautiful song. And yes, we're just kind of catching up and talking about all things music. And so, yeah, are you looking forward to kind of, so you've got ahead, you've got a tour plan for the fall. And tell me a little bit more about the album that's coming out this fall and kind of when we can expect like another single and a little bit more about the album itself.
Yeah, 100%. There's another single coming out in August, one in September, and then the record actually comes out November 4th, I want to say it is. The record's called What Tomorrow Brings. And I'm sure everyone can guess what that title means, but it was just the the constant shock and awe of going to bed over the pandemic of like, what could possibly happen tomorrow? You know,
hey.
It's like, there's a pandemic. Oh, there's a social movement. Oh, there's, you know, they're storming the Capitol on January 6th. Oh, they're overturning Roe versus Wade. Like, what could possibly happen next?
Right.
It's mind-boggling what we're witnessing.
Yeah, somehow it sounds hopeful though. The way you it doesn't sound gloomy to me as an album title. Like maybe
I'm glad you're picking up on that.
Yeah.
Because at the same time, the paradox of it all was that like the most important watershed paradigm shifting moments of my life were happening. You know,
we
got married and we took over the property that I'd owned forever but never lived in or made a home out of, and you know, we have two beautiful boys, Henry and George, and you know, we've made all these incredible moments and milestones and done all these things that were, you know, it's what life is supposed to be about. This is the important stuff. And let's be honest, the most hopeful thing you could ever do in life. Not that it's the end all be all. If you don't end up being a parent, that's also your journey. But those who have had a child would say it's an act of hope. I mean, you have one because you feel like there'll be a generation that will be better, you know? And as much turmoil as there was, I do feel like the amount of social movements that happened that were for good that we witnessed, and the amount of change that happened, and you know, even from just seeing the way the landscape of media that has changed, the opportunities that exist, that it feels like it's a little bit more level. You know, it's a little more level.
And even just witnessing the resilience of kids, I think too, is a huge thing.
100%. Yeah, everyone kept talking about the kids at the beginning of this, and the ironic part is that the kids are stronger than the parents.
Exactly.
The kids all did just fine. It's the parents, I think, that suffered. So.
Well, listen, this is a wonderful chat, and we're coming up on time here, and so I'm going to play us out with a song, but I just wanted to say thank you so much for your time tonight, and it was really great to talk music with you, and I look forward to your new album, and thanks again for being on the show.
It's absolutely my pleasure, Mary, and good luck with everything.
Okay, you take care. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
That's what they say. Can lock the doors and cover my ears. It's easier that way. I wanna tell you that I'm sorry. I wanna go back to the start. For the cavern.